Let us cultivate the altruistic motivation seeking complete enlightenment for the sake of liberating infinite kind mother sentient beings. With that kind of altruistic motivation or bodhicitta motivation, that we should all participate in this teaching. And as we cultivate altruistic motivation in order to listen to teaching or participate in the teaching, we must not just be thinking about just oneself alone as an individual person. Nor should we be thinking just about a certain limited number of people or sentient beings, because that might involve discriminatory attitude, because we might be favoring certain number of people or beings and wishing them the best of everything. What we really need to do is think about all sentient beings across time and space, and we cultivate the motivation that I'm going to listen to this teaching so that I will be able to put the teaching into practice, and through study and practice that I'm able to find complete enlightened state, so that I will be able to help sentient beings to be free from the state of suffering, general suffering of samsara or sickly existence, and particular sufferings of three unfortunate states of rebirth. So if you cultivate that kind of motivation and then listen to teaching, the time we spend together here, whatever the duration is, about an hour and a half or whatever the time we spend, then our listening to teaching or participating in the teaching become meaningful and purposeful. And through this kind of participation with altruism, that we are able to bring a lot of benefits to both self and other sentient beings.
Well, nice. Tāwana āndu sāngarvās, āni sēngi jitāyāndu sāngi kōmbā tōp gugurīs, tā tōp dhīm hēngu yōrvā. Āni āni tē tōp tūgurī fēsāṁ, āni āndu sīng tēsum shēng nā tēsum shēyā yōmārīs, tēm ebi jū sēngi hūgīs.
So as we are, you know, cultivating altruistic motivation, or what we call in Sanskrit bodhicitta motivation, that you can see this is such a, you know, very spacious kind of motivation that thinks about all sentient beings. So what our motivation really involves is finding one's own enlightenment in order to benefit all other sentient beings. So that means we basically want to become Buddha or enlightened person so that we can bring benefits to other sentient beings. Now the next question that might arise in our mind is, can I really do that? Is that a possible thing to accomplish? And if you have certain doubt about it, or maybe, yeah, it's nice to wish for that, but I don't think I can achieve enlightenment. If you have certain doubt or, you know, speculative mind, now let me address that issue here. Oh. I think we can do it.
The thing about the Torah, Kari is, Ranji Yepi, Dungit Serunki Radius.
Let me address this in few different points. Number one, we need to recognize that whatever suffering exists in the entire universe of samsara, suffering is something that can be put to an end. Suffering is something that can be exhausted. So how can we say that we can't, stop suffering completely or put an end to suffering? That's because when we look at what brings suffering or what are the causes of suffering, then we can also see that the causes of suffering that we can abandon completely is by way of abandoning causes of suffering that we are able to stop suffering.
Te karre sana dunge ki ju kunjung ki kunjung tela ne ne ba shege ta nyembo top de dem chi yede.
You know, how is it possible that we can abandon causes of suffering? Because when we talk about causes of suffering, as in the, we say in the Four Noble Truths, truth of cause of suffering, this truth of causes of suffering are something that can be counteracted by very powerful and effective antidotes.
Kasing yaman ikibi nas, nawate mimba nyibote, and then nawate
As you may recall from last week, I gave you this example of how light or illumination and darkness cannot coexist or simultaneously. When light shines, darkness must go, must be dispelled. And when darkness exists, there is no illumination. Because illumination or light is an antidote that directly contradicts or dispels darkness. In the same way, when antidotes are cultivated in our mind, they are present in our mind, antidotes to causes of suffering, then the causes of suffering must go like darkness. They cannot coexist with the antidotes, with those antidotes.
That kasi kiyo mas dungi ka ranjili yepi dungi ta git karis na ranjili yepi ta nyomo ta kunju nyomo ta chayin karis.
So what are the real causes of suffering we experience, if you ask, as I was explaining to you before, last time also, that in our own mind, we have deluded states of mind called delusions and contaminated karmic actions. These two, delusions and contaminated karmic actions, are the real causes of suffering.
So that the doing you talk kunju the seji lamtik hakongres the karres tang tang chegores.
So if delusions And contaminated karmic actions are the real causes of suffering. Now, what are the antidotes then? What are the paths that we can cultivate to get rid of them? Of course, there are many different antidotes we could cultivate and to counteract delusions, but perhaps the real antidote, the most powerful antidote to abandon delusions is cultivating the wisdom, realizing selflessness. So in regard to that, as we engage in study or listen to teaching, or whatever practice we do, all of this must be oriented towards cultivating the wisdom, realizing selflessness. So what must come before we could cultivate the wisdom realizing selflessness, if you ask? The answer to that is that first we really need to understand the suffering nature of cyclic existence or samsara in which we find ourselves in. So in order to bring together some of the core principles of Dharma or Buddhism, our historical teacher Shakyamuni Buddha has said very clearly, which is popularly known in Tibetan as Tawa Kadaji Chagyashi, meaning the four seals of his
Buddha's teaching.
So what are the four characteristics or the seals of Buddha's teaching, if you ask? Number one, Buddha said, all produced phenomena are impermanent. In other words, all composite phenomena are impermanent. What do we mean by composite? We mean like anything that is produced by causes and conditions, that phenomenon or those phenomena are to be understood as being transient, as being impermanent. So basically what Buddha is saying is that in general, everything that is produced by causes and conditions is impermanent, and especially produced phenomena which are associated with conjoined with samsara or cyclical existence are impermanent, which is, means that they do not last forever.
So
So what we really need to understand from that statement is that whatever suffering exists in samsara or cyclical existence, suffering is a produced phenomenon. Therefore, it cannot exist forever. It is not permanent. And nor is the causes of suffering. The causes of suffering are also impermanent because they can be counteracted by antidotes and can be abandoned.
So
So based upon that first core principle or a seal, called all produced phenomena are impermanent, we should understand that all kinds of faults that we find in samsara, the faults here also include suffering, are impermanent. So therefore, you know, they must come to an end.
Correct, isn't that? Calling into
So through this, the Buddha is also telling us that we need to renounce samsara or cyclic existence, that we need to develop aversion to the miseries in samsara. In other words, that Buddha is telling us that we must develop aversion to, you know, samsara altogether. We must not get attached to the marvels of this lifetime, nor should we get attached to the marvels of future lifetimes in samsara. We really need to, how to say, you know, get fed up with samsara, if we simply put it in ordinary language, just get fed up with samsara and its suffering. So that is a general explanation that I just provided, but now we need to relate that explanation to ourselves personally or individually, and that's to be that is to say that whatever problems and suffering we experience in our life, whether it is physical problem or suffering or mental problem or suffering, we should understand that suffering, you know, is impermanent and it can be stopped. We can put an end to suffering. So what I just explained is basically that suffering in general is something that cannot last forever. It is impermanent. And so are the causes of suffering. So they are also impermanent. Now we need to apply those general principles to our own life. And so it's very important for us to understand that whatever suffering I as an individual person experiences, both mental and physical suffering, and the causes of suffering that I have within my own mind, in other words, my delusions, all of this could come to an end because all of these are impermanent phenomena. So that's what we really need to understand. So when we understand true nature of suffering and the causes of suffering, then even if we experience certain problems or suffering in our life, we will have a better perspective on suffering, and even though we suffer, let's say physically, but mentally, we are able to stay much calmer and able to deal with physical suffering.
Younger is that?
In the context of mind training, especially where we do what is called Tonglen practice, the practice of taking or receiving other suffering and its causes upon oneself and giving happiness and its causes to others, which is in Tibetan called Tonglen practice, the practice of giving and taking, not give and take. And so in the, as we train our mind through such Tonglen practice, so what Tonglen practitioners really experience is, it doesn't matter in what kind of circumstances, situations they find themselves in, good or bad, they're able to withstand both good and bad situations, and they are able to use all those circumstances, good or bad, in order to help them to cultivate, the path leading to enlightenment. So they're able to transform even the bad circumstances, into favorable conditions to pursue enlightenment.
So
the first seal is called Dujhe Thamje Medaba. All produced phenomena are impermanent. Now, as you can see, this is a very profound premise or a statement, and there's a lot to think about this. And as I just briefly explained to you, when we relate it to ourselves personally, how that really affects our way of thinking. So what I'm trying to get across to you is this, that in our everyday life, whatever suffering or problems we encounter or face, big or small or whatever, but if we see that, it doesn't matter, because suffering is something that does not exist, forever. It comes to an end, because suffering is in the nature of impermanence. So things which are impermanent do not exist, forever.
So the fact that I'm not here, run a pair, little tumpy pair, run the yogurton, that puzzle to what is you mean? And then Anita, Tahi Tembachi Mare.
And also, all the good things happening in our life, we have success in what we do, prosperity, and, all kinds of good things happening in life. But if we realize that, all of this are, after all, in the nature of impermanence, so which means that these things will come to an end eventually. So if we have that kind of perspective, then we do not get too much attached to or grasp at all the good things happening in our life.
No, that garanso thaba teni ko lo kema mai varanji sheva sheba la neba do niyung tu sambate hiu thaba ki neba do garanso jir shego kuyo.
In order for us to experience genuine aspiration seeking enlightenment, liberation, enlightenment, we must cultivate what is known as renunciation. We have to develop aversion to samsara or cyclic existence. Only then we could have genuine aspiration seeking freedom from samsara.
Shen rinan sikyo dagas magyaba shen, ani koyo shen toni, shen de gidan, jewe, ani de gubadan, tong gubadan.
So when we talk about developing renunciation to samsara or cyclical existence, what do we really mean by that? Is that how will we in the first place generate that? Is that when we see what is wrong with samsara or cyclical existence? You know, what are the limitations of samsara? What are the disadvantages of samsara, being in samsara? When we think about these things, then we develop this sense of like, I do not want to be associated with all these, you know, limitations and what is wrong with samsara. I want to be separated from, you know, from all these, samsaric things. And so that's how we develop the sense of, I want to be out of samsara. I do not want to be anymore in samsara with all those limitations and disadvantages and the faults and all of that. His Holiness the Seventh Dalai Lama, Gyecho Kesan Gyatso, in his spiritual songs, very clearly reflected on the changing nature of things in samsara. As Geshe-la is quoting the whole poetry from his memory, basically he says, one should understand that even if one experiences very high status and position right now, eventually, those who are in a high status and position, they could completely fall into the low position where they might be treated upon by other beings. They might be considered like servants and slaves. So basically what he's saying is that even if one experiences a high status position right now in as a king or a queen or a minister, of any modern positions, we can add to that, but eventually all these things must come to an end. And then when the things change, it is very possible that one could now become a very low position beings or people, that people might treat you like servants and slaves.
That time, tarin was on tongue mando, naransoke, missing dig toilet, and the shons.
I don't think we really need to look that far. Just based on our own very short life so far, what we have experienced and seen, we see that all these things happened. And I don't need to give you any names or, I think, examples. We see all kinds of, changes from high status to low status, all these things we have witnessed.
You don't want to read you any, they aren't the maybe charges. That is a Tunke Nania, Tunke Tuj Tamak, Etamedona, yes. Three or the Sanyu Gumarvas, Sanyu Pesal Saita, Roma to Salasai, and Yaka, just a Tanaki, Chagres, says Zuzang, Zuzambu, Kivision, a Telichayas Yamar, Tunke, Tun, Sanyu, maybe Chayag, that drink a Medona, Kiriskan.
And then the seventh Dalai Lama goes on to say in his poetry that one should understand that whatever beauty and youth one has now, maybe one is at the prime of one's youth and at the greatest height of one's beauty, but they are very short-lived, like the flowers that bloom at the end of the autumn season. I think in America it's called fall. So at the end of the season, there are some flowers bloom. Maybe they just bloom for today, and tomorrow they're dead. You know, so this is what it is. You know, they, you know, one should not get attached to, obsessively attached to, and cling to, and grasp at one's youth and beauty, because after all, these are impermanent and they don't last too long.
我说的对你决定的对的，昨晚的对行动呢，你别进了个女人，我让说了别，就叫了怎么忙不休息，跟那个昨晚平时做不休息那样，没见到这次亚呢，说是被人家，人家没见到，这次亚呢，让个大的不说的行为，这个呢，他本来，你带人，到底怎的家人嘛都，开开派，还没带几个，那真是可能的哇。
And then the seventh Dalai Lama goes on to say that one should understand that whatever resources, wealth that one has, after all, you cannot carry it with you. It has to be left behind eventually. So you should treat as if your wealth is something you have borrowed from other people. It's just like, metaphorically speaking, we have borrowed jewelry from friends and we are wearing those jewelry, but you know, we have to give it back, return to the owners. Like that, we might have so much wealth, we are so rich, but when the life comes to an end, all this riches and wealth must go to somebody else. We cannot bring it, you know, with ourselves. So basically why we are going through all those things, and what I mean the great seven Dalai Lama is saying is that we must understand these are the disadvantages or the limitations of, you know, being in samsara. So as we reflect on these limitations and disadvantages of samsara, then what we really need to think about is, okay, I do not want to be associated with these limitations, you know, forever. I want to be, I want something else. You know, I want to be out of samsara. I don't want to be associated with this samsaric, stuff. So I think that would be sufficient with regard to the first core principle characterizing Buddha Dharma, or the first seal as in stamp, which is called all produced phenomena are impermanent. And the second core principle or the seal characterizing Buddha's teaching is called Sakyatamjitungyaba. Everything that is contaminated is in the nature of misery or suffering. So what this really basically, second core principle is telling us is, what brings suffering to us? What are the causes of suffering that we must recognize and understand and get rid of those causes of suffering? Remember we said earlier, suffering arises from delusions. And delusions and both suffering impermanent, and we should counteract delusions so that they can come to an end. So in order to be able to counteract delusions, which are the causes of suffering, one of the things we should know about and do is, well, first we have to know about the law of karma. What is karma and how it functions?
So
we need to understand, if you will, the theory of karma and its consequences or results. Some of the major characteristics of the law of karma or action are, if we do not create certain karmic actions, we will never experience their results. Okay, and but if we do create certain actions, then we are the ones responsible for our karmas, and we need to experience their results. We cannot expect the results of our karma to be experienced by other people, nor do we expect to experience the result of karmas that other people create, because each of us are responsible for our own karmic actions. So therefore, if we create karmic actions, we will experience their results. If we don't create them, we do not have to worry about them.
Tati kichimara, kanyasa, rang le mdrepe rikdabi shungbi yina, tu me yingi shayne, rang yunga ki nduksang tangwe, tu tangji yamaris, tu tangki mangbu yarabas, tari tangji yamaris, rang di shepe le ti, nami ti, rang yunga yinba ti ngayabadu sangkangwaris.
So what I'm explaining to you, I mean, it's also very important for us to understand that, you know, usually what we think is, you know, if things go wrong with our life, so we blame other people as if they are responsible and they messed up our life. But what we're really talking about karma is that we have individual responsibilities in terms of what karmas we create or don't create. So we experience the results of our own karmas, you know, and we do not experience the results of other people's karma. So other people are not to be blamed for our life experiences, because our life experiences are related with or are the outcomes of our own karmic actions.
So the wrong, yeah, debo to keep a shumbi in there. The any wrong leg gave us sanity, let me the wrong young mato, and me ye any honor, take him to do. And it marries the San Pongia marries.
So when I say that, you know, we are responsible for our karmic actions, I mean in both positive, in terms of both positive and negative karmic actions, you know, if things go wrong with us, we cannot blame other people, because these are the, you know, results of our own negative actions. But if things are going well with our lives, say we are succeeding, we are prospering, these are also the results of our good karmas. It's not like other people are making a gift, you know, to us.
Ona andesan tongrovas ya be drit tesum sagrovas ona ngandu deb de chibo yote ane sanjege onje na marbe sangdoges ne.
Now one might speculate or bring up this issue. Okay, so in that case isn't it, don't we talk about how the good things happening in our life are through the blessings of Buddhas?
That the sanjege Sanjay can lay the sign at the meeting of the young women. The car is in the Naranzo, lay go at your sires, lay go aside the Sanjay can it tap the Naranzo Sagi, Saya the Tap Matina, Naranzo Rando with Sai to your manners. So the Sanjay can tap the thing. They run the Yamsalang, and they get one to say, Shay is a tea, no meet around young women.
So when we say that, you know, the things really going well in our life, all the good things happening are through the kindness and blessings of Buddha, we do not mean it to say that, well, all the things happening good in our life are the results of the good karmas that Buddhas have created. Okay, because we cannot experience the results of the Buddha's karmas for ourselves. But what we really meant by that is that we on our own are not really in a position to understand about all the intricacies and the complexities of the law of karma. What is karma, you know? What are the different kinds of karma? What are the consequences of karma? We cannot understand all of these things just on our own. So we need to rely on Buddha's teaching. So Buddha taught us about the law of karma. So that's why he presented the theories of karma. So through Buddha's teaching, we learn about the law of karma and its consequences. And not only that we learn it, now we try try to follow Buddha's teaching on karma. So as we apply the teaching to ourselves, we engage in the positive actions, we don't try not to do the negative actions and all that. So through our own actions, good actions, that we experience good things in life. But in our mind, if you think like that, all the good things happening in our life are the gifts from Buddha, as a Buddha just, give us a gift, then, by the same logic, we have to say that, things which happen go wrong in our life are the things maybe Buddha is doing it. And that doesn't make any sense. In the first place, Buddha cannot do it, and Buddha will never have an intention to harm anybody. So Buddha should not be causing any harm to anybody. So that does not make really sense, theoretically. Buddha giving us suffering or Buddha giving us, some kind of happiness. It all must come from our own actions based upon Buddha's teaching. Buddha cannot be responsible for all the suffering that exists in samsara and the causes of all the suffering in samsara. Buddha could not be a creator of suffering and creator of the causes of suffering. Why? Because Buddha has infinite love and compassion. The kind of love and compassion extended equally towards all sentient beings. So how could Buddha ever think of, creating delusions and causing suffering? That's just impossible. So one of the major characteristics of law of karma is if we don't create karmic actions, both good and bad, then we will not experience their results. Don't need to worry about it. Or don't, nothing to expect either. But another major characteristic of law of karma is that whatever karmas we have created and accumulated, they simply do not go waste. Now once we have created karmas, good or bad, we will have to experience their good and bad results. As we debate in the monastic debate courtyards, if we have created certain negative actions which will bring suffering, but that does not mean that we will necessarily have to experience the suffering results of bad karmas. Why? Because the negative karmas can be intercepted or interrupted. Okay, let's think in terms of two different moments. In the first moment, we create a negative karma, which is sure to bring a negative result. But before it brings this result in the second moment, we, counteracted that negative karma. We intercepted it, with certain antidote. So in which case, even though we have created a negative karma, but it does not bring suffering to us because we could change that karma, or we could, counteract that karma.
Can be result comes. Must come down. I think. Carries the name of top members.
So when we apply powerful antidotes to purify ourselves of negative karma, then how could those karmas bring their negative results? They cannot.
That thing is pretty curious.
Now let me give you an example to illustrate my point. I'm going to tell you a story that is in the Buddhist literature.
No.
So what we find, an example in the Buddhist literature to illustrate the law of karma and how it brings its results, is like the seeds of any grain, you know, that have the potentiality or the potency to produce the sprouts. But let's say we have prepared the soil. Okay, we have assembled all the necessary conditions for things to grow, and then we put some seeds of maybe rice or grain or whatever. So we have to say that these seeds have the potency or the potentiality to produce the rice seedlings or the wheat sprouts or whatever. So in a general sense, we say that, you know, if you have a good seed, that seed has the potential to produce its sprout, and only if you put it in favorable conditions, in which case fertile soil and so on. Now that's let's limit the conditions here. Let's say we put a seed in the first moment in a nice soil. So we all agree that moment that, okay, this seed must produce the sprout. But before it produces sprout, let's say this seed is spotted by some bird, and a bird just comes and digs out the seed and eats it. Well, now what happens? Now that seed cannot produce its sprout. Right? We can see that.
Yes.
So with this example, what we are trying to illustrate is that let's say we have created certain negative karmic actions. Well, in a general theory sense, theoretical, these negative actions are sure to bring negative consequences or results. Okay? That's in the law of nature, law of karma. However, before these negative karmas bring the results, if there are certain powerful antidotes, that could counteract or intercept these negative karmas, then those negative karmas do not necessarily bring the outcomes, because they couldn't, because they could be counteracted by powerful antidotes. So this is what we are talking about. Negative actions can be purified through the application of powerful
antidotes.
We can completely trust in our historical teacher Shakyamuni Buddha's words, where Buddha himself said it very clear that if we do negative, we will have negative. If we do negative karmic actions, we will have negative results. Okay? But at the same time, Buddha also said that, negative karmas can be purified. They are purifiable. So both words of the statement of Buddha are equally true. We can treat negativities which could potentially bring negative results, but before they bring their negative results, we could purify them, because negative actions are purifiable. And then the third core principle, or the third seal that characterizes Buddha's teaching, is called Chötamje Tongshin Tameva. All phenomena are empty and selfless. Okay, now this really reveals the true path. Okay, now I don't want to take too much time explaining each of these things. So I'm just simply going to highlight it here. So everything that exists, we call phenomena, are in their nature empty or selfless.
Just dungi le ten de tawe tarbas tarbas ye kanin tarbas na dungi le ten de tarwa ne le da nyomo le ten de tarwa tle tarbas.
And then the last or the fourth core principles of Buddhist teaching or the fourth seal is called Nyangela Deva Shiva, state beyond suffering, because Nirvana is a state of peace. So what is Nirvana? What is liberation, if you ask? We are talking about liberation from, complete liberation from suffering, a kind of state where once we achieve it, we will never have to experience suffering anymore. That state is called state beyond suffering or nirvana, or the kind of state where we are completely free from delusions and contaminated karmic action. That state is called liberation or freedom. And in that state, we experience real and eternal peace. So these are the four cardinal or the core principles which characterize Buddha's teaching, and they are called, metaphorically speaking, four seals of Dharma. Let me run through the list. All produced phenomena are impermanent. That which is contaminated is in the nature of misery or suffering. That which exists or all phenomena in their nature are selfless or empty. And the state beyond suffering is the state of peace.
Yes. So the Nyangilin desi at sar Nyangde Nyangde say at the Nyangilin desi Nyangi di Jani telepan debas to give it Nyangilin desi ta Nirvana se tu tanda ti ungar ba se ta ta kimi ni tu ta ranje ina Nyangilin dasa Nyangi karre se nyundu di jago ta ti ba chimbe se ina Nyangi tele ta ni se nyundu ta chidu ningali pan debi give it ta desi.
Sanskrit term nirvana, or Pali term nibbana, which in Tibetan is translated as nyangde, which literally means state beyond distress. Now we have to go with that Tibetan word to be able to understand the concept here. What is suffering or distress we are talking about here? Because we are trying to talk about transcending distress or going beyond suffering. The nyangin or the distress, literally translating here, according to the system of shavakas or solitary realizers, hearers and Pratika Buddhas or solitary realizers, distress or nyangin, it refers to delusions or the deluded mental obscuration. Because what these practitioners are trying to do is they go beyond the state of deluded mental obscuration. They want to get rid of delusions. Okay, so that's how they find their nirvana or moksha. Now, according to the system of Mahayana, Bodhisattva's practice, distress, going beyond distress, we have to talk about that. Distress refers to the two types of mental obscuration. Obscuration to liberation and obscuration to omniscient state. So once we abandon those two mental obscurations for good, then we have gone to the state beyond distress or nirvana. Now that's what we call enlightenment. So I have taken the time, as I often do before I go return to the text we are dealing with, and give you some generic very important principles of Buddha's teaching, and this would serve as a reminder for those who already know these things and who have been coming to teachings for a long time. But for those who are new, then you learn about Buddhism, the four seals of Dharma, the four cardinal principles characterizing Buddha's teaching, that which I just explained very briefly, and some I even highlighted it, I didn't get explained. These core principles are universally accepted all over Buddhist world. It doesn't matter, what kind of Buddhism you're talking about. Every Buddhist must accept or subscribe to these four core principles.
Honest. Tak kasih ini dah terale, ni mah kaki sejuk macam ini. Kalau izin tak kasih ini, kāng tēmbā ñiñbī āni phūgā tēnā sētā āni tēnī ñiñbī āni dūñ yūg rē sāng sōng
Now going back to where we left off last week in this wonderful text called A Miscellaneous Collection of Kadamba Geshe's Advices, remember we were talking about cultivating altruism or bodhicitta and how we should be very focused and mindful of this cultivation. But if we let distraction poke hole into our mind, then our cultivation of bodhicitta will be harmed or it will be damaged.
Oh, yeah. I can see it, but Geshe says, even I can see, should be keep this one. Why? It's because the energy of the eyes should losing if it without glass, you know? That is
Tani
Sange Pugat and any Karisa do same Rangal and the Dushugri. Do it human, Sanji same from the Kari in the Chu Gava Krishna and tell never shake his canon.
So do not let distraction poke hole into meditation or mindfulness practice. If you do that, then you know the devils of the delusions could sneak through that hole into our mind. And then when the devils are already in the mind, then not only will that damage our cultivation of bodhicitta, but it will damage all our other virtuous practices. Because when the devils rule, the delusions, you know, contaminate and rule our mind, then we cannot do positive actions.
Yeah, devil say that because he loves him, but the new moon is new moon. But do see your motto, me, Kansa, do turn real your mothers.
So, again, I already explained this to you before, but I want to emphasize it. You know, when we use the word devil or demon or Mara, here we're talking about the deluded states of mind. We are not talking about any living or sentient beings.
All right, that's right, Kanji. Around the same thing, Marumba Shaven Zenta, because Nanglo, the same thing, Beta, Miki, Sol, Shukim, can do live Zenta, and it tell you, you can't let it, Kazata letter, do see the thing, do some Jonah can do.
So what we're really saying here is, you know, if we let our mind be deluded, then our mind becomes very negative. So when we have a very negative state of mind, then it is as if that we as a person has become very like a devilish. You know, we are, as a person, individual, we are not the devil or demon, but our mind has gone so negative, so it is like a devil is residing in our mind or heart.
Do you cover the Sabbath and the Yamaras?
Yes.
The United, the
So here, of course, I mean, demon of delusion, it doesn't matter what color we can talk about. It's yellow, red, you know, brown, or orange, whatever. You know, sometimes in the Buddhist literature, you know, we talk about different colored demons, you know, we call it the devil of death is red in color. Who cares? I mean, if the delusions in our heart, they damage, you know, our positive actions, and that's what we should be thinking about. So when our mind, in the point I'm trying to make here is that once our mind becomes very deluded and very negative, then, you know, the label devil might even be applied to the person whose mind is so negative and deluded. Then we might be able to say, like, oh, he is such a demon or a devil.
Nonetheless. That's the same.
And here the great Adisha tells us that if we let delusions control our mind, let delusions arise in our mind, then even if we think that, okay, I'm practicing Dharma, or I want to practice Dharma, the fact of the matter is that what we do, it becomes just empty, meaningless, because mind is controlled by delusions.
Sem yung mi wan ta rich pus, tama chi vi chen as, lama tang cho che pre chen nam, nyang ye ta yi mu shi ru ma yu chi sa. Ta kan si, sem yung mi wan ta tang ni chue ma dhe pe sen ni, nam yin ke wang ki ta, sen de ta xe wa shi ma ke, pe ta,
And here Adisha is addressing his disciple. He said, "Oh, sons of noble lineage, you should not let your gurus or lamas and friends be sad and disappointed at the time of death." Now what he's really talking about is, if we let delusions pop up in our mind, and if delusions influence our way of thinking and actions, then really, I mean, even if we say we are practicing Dharma, it just becomes, it makes no sense. And then what happens at the time of death is that we really disappoint our gurus or lamas and our Dharma friends, and they feel so sad and disappointed, when they witness, our death.
Dayan de yeyang, yeyang, vitempa, chula meba, nam yin muki. Tesum do majukis, tesum do majukis, ta? Yang, the Dalai Lama the Churu came mena yang. Ani yang jitemba, ani yang the Rangawa, ta sushi shewo se. Sushi shewo, ani chuele meba yang kitan su, ani sem duki juwa maris. Kari yasa na, dosi ni en seya le, ta nga chueba yin seya se. Ani, shawa de, le seya ta, ani, migi le chan saan te sebe, ani ta kunzu sem yin mu gres, sem du gres. And
the great Adisha continues to say that, let's say, even if maybe, we don't necessarily think about disappointing our gurus and Dharma friends. Let's say maybe somebody doesn't have all of that. But you don't want to disappoint, other people who have interest in Dharma. Interest in Dharma and then doubt Dharma. The explanation given is that, one claims oneself to be a Dharma practitioner, but what the other people find, ordinary other people who are interested in Dharma, maybe they're not practicing Dharma yet, but sees you, they find that everything that you do is negative, completely contradict Dharma, but yet claim you are a Dharma practitioner. So they really get so disappointed and uninspired by one's actions, and then they must start to doubt about Dharma, and that's not good.
So that, Maranjogari, Kyo Karayi, the Chechung Karayi, Dubi Yinaya. There's Kuno Namba Kapating, about the Guru Haris.
Whatever practice we do, very small or big, I think we really have to make sure that our motivation to do the practice, small or big practice, is really pure motivation.
Tan dita yirmo je kikana yoris, dita tungu duwa kira, kare se samba zana sata lami zans, ane samba ngen sata ngen, jesa tamki samba tala lis, dosi ne ane, ta susu ane kare se kyo,
And what Manjushri Lama Tsongkhapa or Jerembuche has said elsewhere, I think it really completely agrees with what we're talking about here by Adisha. And as Geshe-la quoted the lines from his memory, Jerembuche said, if your mind is positive and noble, you will have positive and noble paths and grounds. But if your mind is negative, then you will be on negative paths and negative grounds. So everything depends on the mind. So that's what we're talking about, the need to train our mind.
sōng tāng rāng tsōma lōku chū dōng kī tsōka rāng sēn kī tā tāng nī kī nā jēba sē nī mī yīn lā, sēn kī yīn lā nā yā kī sāmba tāng, sāmba tāng dōgay sē ngā nī gyō kī dōgay sē lū kī shāwā sē kī dōgay sē yīn lā, yīn lā nā yā kī lū ngā kī shāwā kārā sē kī dōtē nū sē kī dōtē yā, tā tsām kī pēmbā sē kī dōtē, ān tā yā, ān tē lā gāwā gōm sē dōsī ngā yā tsōma lō sē kī chā kī yō rī sē
So all of us, you know, who are interested and who are practicing Dharma, we need to look within our own state of mind and reflect on our own state of mind and find out whether we have generated any negative thought to harm other sentient beings or people, and whether we are carrying out that negative state of mind through actions of body and speech. Are we physically harming someone? Are we saying something nasty or hurtful things to others? But if we realize that we are doing those things, we must try to stop right away. The negative way of thinking, the negative physical action, the negative verbal action. On the other hand, if we realize that we are thinking positively and we are helping and benefiting others, well, then we have good reasons to rejoice in our own positive actions. So it seems like, everybody looks, seems like maybe it's hot temperature down there. Geshe-la says he can see the, perspiration yes, on a lot of people. So maybe we'll stop there today.
Shining by sweat.
I think your sweats and the dewdrops are shining.
Okay, that. Bring on Cuba to the Ning Summon around Summon of Sin Yabu Yat, and he consumed but the Laning Casino Shet of Shagun.
So whatever I have explained today, all of us should keep those things in our mind and do our best to put it into practice. And I have some requests to make here. Two people have passed away. Their names are Margaret Gavlik, died at the age of 92. Tin Tam died last month at age of 41. And then someone also requested that, of course, we see the terrible, crisis in the Middle East, and a lot of innocent people are being killed in Lebanon and also in Israel. So we really want to think about all those who have lost their lives in this way. And Robert Woodley is critically ill after the surgery, so we prayer has been requested for him as well. As you can see that the request that we receive, for prayers is, for people who have lost their lives or who are very ill. And so this all shows about the samsaric nature and the kind of situations we find ourselves in. So we want to think about all of them, the names, that we know and those we don't know. But we wish those who have lost their lives to find good rebirths. And then after finding good rebirth, may they, you know, be able to do positive actions and pursue, you know, positive goals. And those who are very ill, we pray that may they be able to recover from their sicknesses very quickly. And after regaining good health, may they develop interest in positive thinking and doing positive actions.
Shinkinta, ane tan nangin sangin samalo ngaranso kita, ngunis sangin ngaranso kita, kami pinja cahdi gimaris, ngaranso pe dewa cimbo cahdi samalo cahdi gimaris. Sosa tentu mungkin pe nyoba tentu kaya tan, tujuan susu tanda memihun yang agak sangat kongres.
And beings, you know, who have died and who are very sick, you know, from another perspective, you know, they have been our kind parents and best friends. So they have connection with us as well, or we have connection with them. So we want to send our best prayers for them so that they're able to find good rebirths, good health, and so they are able to pursue, you know, good actions in their life.
Yeah.
We have come together this morning to participate in the Dharma teachings, and whatever merit that we have accumulated together, we dedicate it for the flourishing of Dharma, the source of benefits and happiness throughout the universe. May His Holiness the Dalai Lama and all other great holy masters live long and be successful in fulfilling their visions, benefiting sentient beings. May spiritual communities throughout the world and spiritual practitioners from all traditions remain healthy, harmonious, and be successful in fulfilling their spiritual aspirations. May this and other world environments be free of all kinds of unwanted pains and problems, wars and destructions, famines and diseases, and may sentient beings find peace, happiness, prosperity, and spirituality. In short, we dedicate our merit for all kind mother sentient beings to be free from the fears and dangers of two types of mental obscuration, and may we all reach complete enlightened state quickly.
Yeah. Ну,